Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Friday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And Jim, it was just yesterday we were cheering Scott Garrett of the House Budget Committee for getting the acting director of Office of Management and Budget to admit that the vaunted tax in Obamacare for not complying with the individual mandate isn't a tax at all, which helps to undercut their legal defense before the Supreme Court. On Thursday, it was the chairman himself, Paul Ryan, questioning Treasury Secretary Tim Geithner about the president's horrific new budget, $3.8 trillion in spending, over $1.3 trillion in added deficits, and of course, more class warfare in the tax code. But Paul Ryan was talking about the fact that in the out years with this budget, they bring the deficit down allegedly by 2022 to what is considered sustainable, even though it's still hundreds of billions of dollars. But then as soon as that 2022 mark hits, it skyrockets into the future. And Ryan says that that's pretty irresponsible on the part of the Obama administration.
Leaders are supposed to fix problems. We have a $99.4 trillion unfunded liability. Our government is making promises to Americans that it has no way of accounting for them. And so you're saying, yeah, we're stabilizing it, but we're not fixing it in the long run. That means we're just going to keep lying to people. We're going to keep all these empty promises going.
Not to be outdone, Geithner admitted that they basically have no long-term plan other than making this look good for the next 10 years at the moment. But he does know that he's not real happy with whatever Paul Ryan wants to do.
Why do they take off again? Why do they do that?
Because we got 10,000 people retiring every day and
that's
healthcare
right.
costs going
we,
up.
We have millions of Americans retiring every day, and that will drive substantial further rate of growth in healthcare costs. And so you were right to say we're not coming before you today to say we have a definitive solution to that long-term problem. What we do know is we don't like yours.
Jim, this is just a microcosm of this administration. We have no idea what we want to do. We just hate your plan. We see it with how they ignore all the pro-jobs bills coming out of the House of Representatives and the Ryan budget last year, and I'm sure this year. All they can do is attack the other guy because they have no idea of their own.
You know, this is probably going to be considered a not in keeping with the new tone that we're all enjoying after the terrible tragedy with Gabby Giffords, but I hear that, Greg, and I just wish we still lived in an era where you could hurl rotten fruit at a public figure when they say something particularly egregious, because Geithner is basically admitting, we have no answer. We have really no good answer, but we're going to demonize you for yours. And that is the Obama administration's approach to this in a nutshell. You basically could argue the entire philosophy of government of Obama and his merry band in the White House entirely, because if you think about it, Greg, you know, you and I will never be president of the United States, or, you know,
probably
barring some dramatic shifts of fate. But it's one of those things where if we were in there, I think you and I would be pulling up the couch cushions looking for pocket change to start paying down the debt, because, you know, the debt and the annual deficit and runaway entitlements, these are all terrifyingly enormous problems for the country. And what's fascinating is that you look at Geithner, you look at Obama, you look at the whole group there, they don't seem all that worried about this. And I don't know if it's because they figure that the real problems will start after they leave office, or, and they'll just sail off to some Caribbean island with you know, with gold bullion and be okay, or how they're going to deal with this. But they really don't seem all that motivated to find a problem. Like there's something shameless about this. Geithner doesn't even feel all that bad that he doesn't have a definitive solution to the long-term problem. Timmy boy, that's your job, you know? I'm just marveling at this. What we do know is we don't like yours. How dare you, Paul Ryan? How dare you come up with a solution that Geithner doesn't like? You know, I mean, this is what the Obama – look, the purpose of government under the Obama administration is to help Democrats stay in office, period. And this is the good martini.
Well, he got it out there, and whoever our nominee is needs to hammer and hammer and hammer this point home, and hopefully they can, because to be able to do that articulately will drive a huge point home with the American voter, because Obama, as you pointed out, Jim, not only has completely failed on this point, doesn't even seem to be interested in solving the problem even on the surface, much less actually digging down into pursuing a policy that would make it a reality. And, of course, his budget right now is a bunch of smoke and mirrors, so even the next 10 years is not going to be anywhere close to quote-unquote sustainable. So One of those people who might be the Republican nominee is Rick Santorum. And, Jim, we've given him pretty high praise for his door-to-door campaigning, basically, in Iowa, and for his strong performance last week in the three-state sweep that didn't actually yield him any delegates. That night, that Tuesday night in Missouri, he really did a good job of articulating the freedom of religion issue, freedom of conscience issue surrounding the whole Obamacare mandate on contraception coverage. As long as Rick Santorum kept to that part of it, it seemed like he was doing fine. Now he's going around talking about how states should be able to ban contraception. And then here's his big donor, Foster Freeze, a big billionaire donor, on with Andrea Mitchell of MSNBC. I'm going to play this in two bites because Andrea Mitchell is talking about the furor over this issue. Here's the good half of the answer from Foster Freeze, and he should have stopped after this.
I get such a chuckle when these things come out. Here we have millions of our fellow Americans unemployed. We have jihadist camps being set up in Central, Latin America, which Rick has been warning about, and people seem to be so preoccupied with sex. I think it says something about our culture. We maybe need a massive therapy session so we can concentrate on what the real issues are.
Good answer. Stop there. Shut up. Don't say
stop.
Don't say anything more.
This contraceptive thing, my gosh, it's such inexpensive. You know, back in my days, they used bare aspirin for contraceptives. The gals put it between their knees, and it wasn't that costly.
Excuse me, I'm just trying to catch my breath from that, Mr. Freeze, frankly.
Jim, this is an issue that could have been huge for Rick Santorum. Potentially, if he gets back on message, it could be. But instead, it's turned into what a lot of people feared about him.
Oh, where to begin, Greg? I mean, the first thing is, for anyone who doesn't get it, well, the idea is if you're holding something between your legs can't be open, and thus you can't have sex, and thus you can't get pregnant. Foster, the people don't like that joke. It's interesting she's calling him Mr. Freeze, because I just flashing back to Batman and Robin, and the name is Freeze, remember it well, for it is the chilling sound of your doom. I heard this, and it just seemed like the quintessential way to just take what I think really genuinely can be a winning issue for Republicans. At this point, it seems, you know, there's a CNN poll that shows that public opposition to Obama's HHS rule is growing. I think what is worth noting here is that this the moment you get into behavior or are people sleeping around too much or something like that, you come across as this finger-wagging scold, and that's not really what this issue is about at all. The issue is, if birth control is to be obtained, who should be paying for it? And oh, by the way, we're talking about something that is available for as little as $9 a month at Walmart, depending on which brand you need, etc. Planned Parenthood puts the cost at somewhere between $15 and $50 a month. Some women, because of health conditions, need more expensive versions of the same kinds of drugs. But you know, the entire rule of Sibelius is there can be no copays. Your insurer cannot make you pay anything for birth control pills. And this strikes me as a wild expansion of the power of government to make an insurer provide something for absolutely no fee. And oh, by the way, as you know, anyone who knows basic economics knows there is no such thing as free lunch. You know, that at some point somebody pays, and the way it pays is through increasing premiums. Now, maybe we as a nation believe that providing health, birth control is a sufficient priority that it's worth raising everybody's health premiums for. And if the Obama administration and Democrats want to say that, go right ahead. But let's keep in mind that this means that Obama and his friends want to make you pay more for health insurance. Now, if they want to go to the election with you know, that as their slogan, I'm okay with that. Because I think we can argue a limited government message that is that, look, this should be between you and your insurer, and you should have a choice in insurance. And this is one of the problems of having your health insurance tied to your employers, that you should be able to choose between an insurer who provides this and an insurer who doesn't provide this. As one person had pointed, we end up doing is raising premiums instead of taxes to implement a government mandate, and somehow this is supposed to make us all feel better. None of this requires joking about women keeping their legs together, and it just seemed like the worst, most tone-deaf approach you possibly could. Everyone on the left, and really more, I think, are justifiably going to beat their drums about this coming across as sexist and insensitive and snide and just terrible. The reaction of I give one tiny bit of saluting to Mr. Freeze for managing to strike Andrea Mitchell speechless. It's an accomplishment. Doesn't happen that often. But as you pointed out, the first part of that sentence was perfectly fine. And then he just had to step in it. And it's just just awful, painful, and egregious. And we will see how much this ends up affecting the Santorum campaign.
Daryl Issa held hearings on this in the Government Reform and Oversight Committee on the House side yesterday, and he just put it very succinctly and very correctly. This is not about contraception. This is about freedom. And as long as that's the point, which is the point of this story, and that can be articulated, great. But once you start getting into the weeds like they have been doing here, this turns in a hurry. So on to martini number three now. We've already talked about Tim Geithner a little bit. Tim Geithner came onto the scene basically being known as a tax cheat. Perfect background for being Secretary of the Treasury. Turns out Kathleen Sebelius, Tom Daschle, Charlie Rangel, of course. Now apparently the list includes Ohio Democratic U.S. Senator Sherrod Brown, who, oh, by the way, is up for re-election this year, so the story comes out at a good time for conservatives, was more than 4 months delinquent in paying taxes on its Washington, D.C. apartment and had to pay a penalty in interest last week. This according to the Cleveland Plain Dealer. He was also delinquent in 2006 and 2007 and also paid penalties in interest that year. In a conference call with reporters, he said, "I was late, I misplaced the bill, and I paid it as soon as I found it. I paid a penalty for being late, and it won't happen again." When asked about why it happened 5 years ago, he said, "I misplaced it then. This is a small apartment. I'm not in D.C. nearly every week, and I'm only here when the Senate's in session for about three or four nights a week. I paid the penalty, and so in no way was I avoiding taxes." So clearly, Jim, I think the point is that one of the reasons that Democrats love raising taxes is because, to some extent, they don't really think they need to pay them.
You beat me to the punchline, Greg. I was about to say that it's, you know, you look at Brown, Geithner, Charlie Rangel, Daschle, you know, it doesn't seem, I guess higher taxes aren't so objectionable when they're optional. Look, when Sherrod Brown describes, boy, you know, who among us hasn't lost some, you know, important piece of paper or paperwork or stuff like that? Of course, you know, envelopes get mixed in with the junk mail. Look, it's very understandable. The problem is that the IRS is not quite, or the District of Columbia Department of Taxation or state level, you know, taxation bureaus, they don't necessarily always seem so forgiving of ordinary citizens. And if we had a nationwide sense of forgiveness, of understanding, of, you know, of being able to understand, all right, you know, people make mistakes and a paperwork misplacement is not the same as a deliberate scam to avoid taxes. Okay, all right, that's fine. But it don't. I mean, you know, the IRS will come down on people like a ton of bricks over what seems like very innocent mistakes. Yet you rarely see them come after U.S. senators the same way. And Sherrod Brown may, you know, have a one or two days of embarrassment and may insist this is no big deal. But in the end, it gets down to this very fundamental level of how does government treat the citizens? And we have more than one class in this country. We have the aristocracy who makes the laws and the rest of us. No wonder this is going to, you know, strike a chord with people. So good news for Josh Mandel, the likely Republican challenger to Sherrod Brown. We'll see if this plays big in Ohio. But I think just it continues the theme of the Democratic Party being the one that doesn't worry that much about taxes because they're really not all that worried about paying.
We'll see who's next. I'm sure it won't be too long before somebody tearfully regrets not paying their tax bill for months at a time. Jim, have a great weekend. We'll talk to you next week.
Looking forward to it, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us next week for the 3 Martini Lunch. Thank you.